The 2027 Medicare Advantage and Part D final rule is out. And while the headlines are one thing, the real story is how this impacts advisors and beneficiaries day to day. Let's get into it.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals.
And I'm your host, David Saltzman, to help us answer all of those very interesting and important and technical questions. We've invited Shailen Jackson, Vice President of Government Affairs at Integrity and Chairman of the NABIP Medicare Advisory Group. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, David. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you on. Before we kind of get into the substance, would you, for folks who may not know, would you talk a little bit about the Medicare Advisory Group, what its mission and goals are, and maybe talk about who the members are?
Yeah, absolutely. The Medicare Advisory Group is one of the subject matter working groups under the Legislative Council of NABIP. So we compile members from all across the country, from all of our regions that are Medicare policy experts and focus in on how NABIP can best respond to and react to Medicare policy and put up proposals for the Legislative Council and the broader association to consider when it comes to Medicare policy. So we've got some great folks from all across the country, from the West Coast with Brian Bilhart. We've got Calvin Bagley. We've got folks from the Heartland like Zach Freeman, myself, Dwayne McFerrin, Amanda Bruton. We've got Tonya Bell, Ed Etsy from the East Coast, Toby Stark. We've got Samantha George, Galen Hendricks. We've got a really good crew. And of course, always taking applications when those working groups applications are open, as I believe they are, at least the day we're recording this. I'm not sure if they'll still be open by the time this goes out. But it's a good group of folks, and we have a lot to look at every year, whether it's final rules like the one that just came out, or whether it is responding to the various requests for information that CMS puts out, responding to policy papers that come out from other think tanks or research organizations, and staying engaged at the state and federal level to drive good Medicare policy for us and for the beneficiaries we serve.
But it does let us make our voice heard. I mean, can you give us an example, maybe a recent example of some input that we've been given that we've seen the results of?
Yeah, I think this final rule is really a prime example of that. There are a lot of things that NABIP has been advocating for on the Hill and with CMS for the past 3-4 years that we have finally seen come to fruition in this 2027 MA and Part D final rule. In addition, we've, after years of asking, have got a quarterly call with some CMS regulators to discuss Medicare issues with us and some of the other agent trade organizations. So that's been a really big win to have a much more responsive organization to work with at CMS. So it's been great to see that really pay off and start to bear fruit with those conversations and to show not just the policy expertise, but the thoughtfulness that we approach this with.
So let's get into this a little bit. When you step back from all the policy language and all that gobbledygook, which is hard for mere mortals to interpret sometimes, what are the 2 or 3 changes in this final rule that you think will most directly impact both Medicare beneficiaries and the advisors who serve them?
Yeah, absolutely. So from the beneficiary side, I think some of the technical adjustments in the rule are going to be the most impactful in the long term. CMS took efforts to codify some of the final provisions of the Inflation Reduction Act, which are things that we've already seen play out in reality, like the $35 caps on insulin or the $2,000 max out-of-pocket cap that will creep up over time with inflation. But that has all been finally codified under this new rule, as well as making some systematic changes to how Medicare Advantage and Part D star ratings are calculated. Now, these changes are going to phase in over the next couple years as CMS looks to remove about 11 star ratings measures, and they have added one new one. So we've got some great partners on the mental health working group that are very pleased to see a brand new star measure for depression screenings and the rate at which those beneficiaries are able to receive timely follow-ups with a specialist. So that new star ratings measure is going to do a lot to advance mental health parity in the Medicare space, which has been a challenge over the past few years. Some of the other measures that are being taken away from star ratings are likely going to make way for new ratings measures in the future as CMS adjusts how they look at plan performance and really discussing what does it mean to be a good plan that's serving beneficiaries compared to some measures that may just be a little bit of an administrative checkbox.
So what do those star ratings actually mean in the real world for plan stability and also for client recommendations?
Yeah, so it's like I tell people all the time, star ratings are a funny little measure because while they mean a lot to plans, they can mean a lot of revenue. Those quality bonus payments for high star ratings can be a huge boost to a plan's bottom line and allow them to provide larger amounts or new and innovative benefits to those beneficiaries, help maintain that stability of those plan benefits. They're also not always the best indicator of how well a plan fits an individual beneficiary's needs. A five-star plan that doesn't cover someone's insulin isn't a good plan for them, whereas a three-star plan with all of your doctors and drugs in network could be the best possible fit on the market. So while it is an indicator of plan performance, it's not the only one that advisors use when they're talking to their clients, and certainly not the only thing a beneficiary should consider when purchasing a plan.
So based on what you're seeing, should advisors expect more plan exits, consolidations, or benefit changes going into 2027 as a result of this rule?
I think we can definitely expect another year of somewhat tumultuous market dynamics. We can expect more of those plan exits, more changes to benefits, just because of some of these systematic changes. Now, CMS put some estimates in there. I don't know how much stock a lot of folks like to put in there, but based on these changes to star ratings alone and some others, we are anticipating another rough funding year for Medicare Advantage plans. We just saw a couple days after this final rule, the CMS rate notice came out at 2.48%, up from the 0.09% in the advance notice. And while a market improvement, many people would say that's still not enough to keep up with general medical inflation. So another very likely rough year for plans as they look to be a little more stable, a little more tuned in with their benefits. And while exits may slow down, I think we can expect to see another year of pretty major adjustments in terms of benefit design, which benefits are being offered, and what types of plans are leading the market.
Well, so the IRA-driven Part D changes are now fully embedded, right? Mm-hmm. What does this mean in the real world for beneficiaries and at the pharmacy counter, and where are advisors most likely to see confusion?
Yeah, so the good news is we have already addressed many of these changes. I think this is one of those kind of lagging indicators where CMS has this requirement to codify these changes as they happen with the Inflation Reduction Act under that statutory guidance from Congress. So all of these changes are things that we've actually been seeing take place over the past two or three years with the redesign of the Part D benefit. So luckily, it's not going to result in any major changes compared to what we have already seen in the market, but it is going to firm up some of those requirements for how pharmacies process claims under the new negotiated prices with Medicare, how we are seeing plans administrate certain benefits in terms of point of sale discounts. So there are a few technical adjustments that could cause some beneficiary confusion, but in terms of the way clients shop for plans, how they calculate those out-of-pocket costs, it is becoming nothing if not more clear at the beneficiary level, and it's going to make shopping a little bit easier for them.
Do you think the Part D changes are likely to create new issues or confusion around creditable coverage, especially for employer or union plans?
I think CMS did a great job in this rule of clarifying and codifying some of those changes and establishing the new standard for creditable coverage for group insurance as 73% of the actuarial value of the drugs to be considered creditable. They have made it much more simple in many ways to calculate that cost, but undoubtedly some beneficiaries may see a little bit of confusion if they don't have a plan that is sending out those notices in a timely manner, or if their plan sponsor is unfamiliar with that actuarial process. So I think it will be a little bit of an adjustment, but by and large has made it easier to calculate that actuarial value for creditable coverage than years past. I think one of the other changes to allow group plans that are using an ICHRA or some other health reimbursement arrangement to provide those employees with benefits, since the underlying plan would be responsible for sending out that notice of creditable coverage, removing that responsibility from the plan sponsor, from the employer, is going to create a little bit of a streamlined approach for some of those beneficiaries that may be using an ICHRA to purchase their Medicare.
Based on everything that's in this rule, do you expect plans to adjust benefits, formularies, or cost sharing?
Always, always adjusting. That's the name of the game every year. Now, what we hope for every year, of course, is stable benefits or improvements to benefits. And again, this year may be one more year of a little more chaos in the market, but I think we can absolutely expect pressure on benefits, whether that's in the form of higher copays or whether it's in the form of pressure on some of the ancillary or extra benefits on Medicare Advantage plans. Pressure for sure will be the name of the game again this year, but we're still expecting to see some pretty robust plans in certain markets. We've already seen pretty massive growth in certain plan types, such as D-SNP and C-SNP plans. So plans are honing in on which beneficiaries they want to serve and trying to go from this maybe more generalist approach of a largely popular, broadly appealing plan, like a market-leading PPO, to really dialing in who that plan is designed to serve and creating a benefit structure that appeals to a certain type of beneficiary rather than a broader audience.
Well, but given all of that, what should advisors be watching for during AEP?
I think advisors need to be prepared for some of these major marketing changes and how that's going to impact their workflow. Some of the things like removing the 48-hour rule from scopes of appointment is going to be hugely impactful to agents from their workflow standpoint, being able to collect those scopes on the spot and then immediately proceed with an appointment rather than having to wait 48 hours is going to be a great benefit for those last minute clients or the ones that maybe don't open their emails or don't send those scopes back in ahead of time. Also, the changes to how we handle events, being able to host educational and sales events back to back rather than the required 12-hour buffer that was in place previously, and being able to collect scopes of appointment at educational events is going to make it easier to see more people in a shorter amount of time and make agents much more efficient, especially when we're looking at, again, another year where we may see some tumult in the market and a lot of beneficiaries needing to change plans. So these marketing changes can be a huge benefit in terms of agent efficiency and how the consumers, how the beneficiaries are able to access their agent and the advice they need to make good decisions at a time when they're really needing that helping hand, that guidance in a complicated market.
There were some updates and some things not finalized around those marketing rules. From an advisor perspective, what actually changes in how we communicate with prospects and clients?
So I think some of the biggest things are, again, this is a very consumer-centric rule. A lot of the elements of this final rule are about putting the consumer back in the driver's seat, removing barriers to the advice that they are seeking out and that they want to engage with, and then making it a little easier for agents and brokers to manage that process. So things like changing the recording rules, where if we're recording those enrollment calls, we still have to keep the enrollment calls on file for 10 years as part of that chain of enrollment, but sales and marketing calls only need to be retained for 6 years, and only for the first 3 years does it have to be the actual call recording. For years 4 through 6, it can actually be just a complete transcript of the call. So reducing that cost burden and that storage burden is a big deal for agents and brokers, and for beneficiary security. Being able to take that data, and once it has lost its usefulness, getting rid of it, disposing of it properly, helping aid in securing that beneficiary information is a big win for agents, brokers, and beneficiaries. In addition, some of the changes to the TPMO disclaimer that we're required to give to beneficiaries over the phone or in person is a big deal. Being able to make sure that that disclaimer is stated, but only before we start talking about specific plans or benefits, rather than in the first 60 seconds of a phone call, allows agents and brokers to actually talk to their clients without interrupting them, to get that disclaimer out in that first 60 seconds without breaking up that flow of conversation, and allowing them to better engage in trust building, better engage in answering questions for those beneficiaries before getting into the more formalized part of the process to conduct an enrollment. Similarly, removing the reference to the SHIP offices in that disclaimer, now directing clients to call Medicare.gov if they want information on all of their options rather than just the ones that the agent can assist with, is going to add a little more clarity and simplicity to that, shorten the amount of time it takes to provide that disclaimer, and use that Medicare.gov resource as a backup for plans that maybe an agent can't represent but may want to.
It's always important in every sale to create a little rapport with a client, but in Medicare, especially given the market that it serves, it's got to be important, but times 10, because there's a lot of noise in that market. They see all the commercials on TV. They get the 84.3 pounds of mail when they, are 64 and a half. So being able to create that rapport without having to go to a recorded statement or a statement you read right up front has got to be huge.
Yeah, it really is. That ability to meet clients where they are and answer their questions when they want them answered, rather than having to follow that older, more formalized process. Again, it's putting trust back in the hands of the beneficiaries, acknowledging that just because we have turned 65 doesn't mean we are, say, suddenly incompetent or suddenly incapable of those educated and thoughtful decisions. So it puts that beneficiary back in the driver's seat and allows them to shop for coverage just like they would for anything else important in their life. Whether that's homeowners insurance, car insurance, or a new dishwasher, the process really isn't that much different. If they want to seek out that trusted advice, they should be able to do so.
So if you're sitting across the table from a Medicare beneficiary, what's the one or two things you would proactively explain differently in 2027 because of this rule?
Yeah, I think the biggest things are talking a little more perhaps about the market dynamics. There's not necessarily anything in this rule that's going to require me to treat a client differently or significantly change my presentation process. But what we can talk about is the pressure that's going on in the market, whether it is that general cost pressure of rising medical inflation, whether it is the star ratings pressure on plans, the pressure on agents and brokers when it comes to compensation and how we represent plans. This is a market that's experiencing a lot of pressure from a lot of angles. And unfortunately, that beneficiary is sometimes caught in the crosshairs where they need access to care, and it's our job to help them find the plan that is going to give them the best access to the care they need at the most affordable rates. So having that open and honest conversation with beneficiaries is going to not just continue to instill that trust that we always seek to find with our clients, but it's also going to help them understand just how complex this market can be. And if anything, those open and honest conversations will continue to reinforce the value of working with an agent and broker that's willing to talk to you about the reality of the market you're stepping into, whether you're a brand new Medicare beneficiary or someone who's been on Medicare for 10 years. It's not the same Medicare it was a decade ago, and the system and the challenges that are within it are very different than even 5 years ago.
In your view, who are the winners and losers coming out of this final rule, like plans, PBMs, beneficiaries, advisors? How would you see that?
Yeah, I think this is a rule where there are a lot of winners in a lot of different ways. Plans have won a few more flexibilities with some of their administrative responsibilities. Some of these star ratings will take some adjustment, but may improve their performance in the long term. Some of the changes to things that they have to proactively provide, some mid-year notices, some other administrative things will save them some money in the short to mid-term. Beneficiaries are big winners here because they're getting more clarity and more continuity about how they can access care and how they can work with their trusted advisors, their agent and broker. And then, of course, agents and brokers are gaining flexibilities that we had in the past and are now returning to us in ways that we never thought would be possible without the advocacy of organizations like NABIP. So that added flexibility for agents and brokers, that kind of return to base of some of these regulations, is allowing us to take an incredibly complex process in an incredibly tumultuous year and streamline everything we're doing to make sure that none of those clients get left in the dark, no one gets left behind, and make sure that we still have the opportunity to go out, find new clients, continue to grow our business, continue to help more beneficiaries. So really, there are maybe different wins for each of those stakeholder groups, but there are things to be happy about for everyone involved.
That's fair. We've got a couple of minutes left. Last question. For Medicare advisors who are listening to this, what should they be doing right now, even though we're months ahead of AEP, to prepare for the downstream effect of this rule?
Yeah, I think the biggest things that agents and brokers should be doing is making sure that they continue to engage. There will be more rulemaking. There will be more changes between now and AEP that can still affect how you do business. The second thing is to really make some of those changes in your business that you maybe were putting off. Anything that went really wrong or felt like it was not efficient or effective during the past annual enrollment period really should be addressed now while you have time. I talk to agents and brokers all the time that say, well, I'm too busy to do this, whether it's hiring staff or acquiring a new piece of technology or whatever the case may be. Well, I promise if you feel busy now, it'll be even worse in October, and we certainly won't have time then. So making that time to really address some of those core competencies of your business and ensure that you're building a robust system that will help push you through Q4, push you through that annual enrollment period, there will never be a better time to do it than today. And that's really my big takeaway for agents and brokers, whether it's building out your product portfolio, upgrading your CRM, finding a new partner to work with, hiring staff. The answer is, what's the old adage? The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today. That's absolutely how you should think about developing and growing your agency as well. And that's the best advice I've got for anyone listening.
Jalen, any other thoughts before we wrap?
I think this year's rule really is a showcase of what that continued and concerted efforts in advocacy can bring. This has been a long path to get to where we are, to have the relationship we have with CMS today, to be able to say, hey, these are things we've been advocating for the past several years, and now they're coming to fruition. So it is representative, I think, of the hard work of not just myself and the Medicare Advisory Group, but a lot of NABIT members of other trade orgs that have been consistently and constantly going to the Hill, going to regulators, sending comment letters, sending responses to these requests for information, telling the story of agents and brokers to make sure that they are really focused on the problems we see in the market and how to best fix them. So I hope what everyone takes out of this rule is some major encouragement that the advocacy we do does work, and that sometimes it takes time. So continuing to go down that path, continuing to push for changes in the market, even though we know it is a long process, it's one that does pay off.
Jalen Jackson, Vice President of Government Affairs at Integrity and Chairman of the NABIP Medicare Advisory Group, thanks for helping us understand this final rule a little bit better.
Thanks for having me, David. I appreciate it.
You can have the Healthcare Happy Hour podcast downloaded automatically by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also find a link to the podcast in the member-exclusive Washington Update published on Fridays. For more information on our government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit nabip.org.